There's two types of haze in beer. You've got permanent haze and you've got temporary haze. The number one cause of chill haze getting into a beer is oversparging. Most brewers use Biofine incorrectly and don't understand exactly what it does. G'day brewers, welcome to the Quality Focus Pro Brewers podcast. My name is Hendo, I'm a pro brewer coach from the Rockstar Brewer Academy, and it's great to see you. Happy New Year. And today we're going to talk about a really interesting topic, kind of related to the foam episode that we did a couple of episodes ago. So if you haven't seen that, go and check out that episode. Today we're going to talk about beer haze, because it is part of the picture of making your beer look good. You can focus too much on making your beer smell and taste good, but if the beer doesn't look good, doesn't look inviting, people ain't going to drink it. And that's super important. But first, I've got to say, g'day, Adzie. How you doing, mate? What's been happening?
Mate, just getting over the seasonal fun with the holidays and new year, new me, back into it, new views, and all the fun stuff that comes with going into a new year. So, yeah. That's
absolutely
where we're at,
mate. It's good to see you. We did catch up for a beer over Christmas, and it was good to go and have a beer, have some lunch, and hang out. And we don't see each other often enough, and I think we need to do that again in the future.
A couple of
future,
big
mate.
Micro lagers too.
I was on the mid strengths. It was awesome. But anyway, we're back into it. So today, talking about beer haze, mate.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. A couple of things, right? So there was a reasonably well-known brewery here in Australia that was pretty well known for its IPAs and its hazy beers, NEIPAs, whatever you want to call them, and stuff like that. And they did a seasonal release for a hazy beer. And then you started to see sort of pop up, and it's to paint the picture, is that this beer on its the label of the can had the word hazy IPA written on it and was marketed as being a hazy beer. But then you started to see on all of the Beer Geek Facebook groups and stuff like that, and people were posting photos of this particular beer online, where there was the picture of the can, and next to the can was a picture of the glass, a glass of the beer, and the beer was bright. This hazy IPA had dropped out bright and clear as a button.
Oh, no.
How do you think consumers would have reacted to that?
Well, it'd be like pouring out a Pilsner and it being hazy, right? It's not what you expect. It's not what you are wanting. And you aren't going to, you're automatically disappointed. Like you lead with your eyes, and as soon as you see it, right, it's not what you want. So
that little bit of disappointment
creeps in.
100%, because you've paid for a hazy IPA and the IPA is not hazy. Yeah. And all of a sudden you're not delivering, even before that drinker has put that beer to their nose or their lips.
Yeah, and it's that dichotomy, right? Like some beers are hazy and just some just should not be, depending on where you're at of your beer style. So, and it's funny too, some people love a hazy beer and they don't even care what it is. They just go, yeah, mate, just give me a hazy, thinking that that's going to be the flavor where the beer can still taste big and juicy and full and be crystal clear. So, yeah, it's haze in beer is a huge topic, because, you know, even way back with your wheat beers and stuff, we always used to have a little bit of haze and whatnot. So, yeah, people, it's not like it's unexpected, but, yeah, there's a lot to talk about today. So
what do you think hazy beers have become so popular in recent years?
I think it's a difference in what beer used to look like for your old man. I think that's what it is. And it also helps perpetrate the juicy aspect of it.
Yes, because it looks like it done properly with the right malt combo and getting the color of the beer right. in conjunction with the haze, they actually can look like orange juice or fruit juice or something like that.
Yeah.
So really,
you a lot too, like in my juicy IPAs and stuff, and instead of just crazy IPAs, called a juicy IPA, because people playing with your mind and saying your palate, this is what it's going to be on your palate, not just what it looks like.
Exactly, exactly. And you've already formed that bias. I think it was Garrett Oliver from Brooklyn Brewery who was asked about hazy IPAs a few years ago. Don't ask me for the source. I just keep random memories in the back of my mind. And he basically said that the rise of hazy beers and hazy IPA in particular is all about Instagram. And that in that hazy beers, hazy IPA are a very photographable style of beer. They look good on a photo. Like a nice bright beer looks good as well, don't get me wrong, but as you said, they're different. Their appearance is that of fruit juice, and then if they deliver on the flavor and aroma outcome of being like fruit juice, then all of a sudden, you know, social media has created this vibe that this is what beer now is, and that sort of thing. And so that's why, you know, at the Rockstar Brewer Academy, we actually have a module called Brew Instagram Worthy Beer. I love or hate social media, you have to brew a beer that looks good, and haze is a big part of that. So
photos are going to look good, and they need to do the beer justice.
And exactly, before you even go and attempt to deliver on the flavor and aroma outcome. So yeah, that's why I think hazy beers have been risen so much in recent years.
So on that aspect, why is it frustrating for brewers? Because there are brewers, as you said, like they're trying to get haze into their beers, or they're trying to keep haze out of their beers. And there's, you know, like, why is it such a struggle? Is it because they've just been used to brewing crystal clear beers, and every now and again they get a hazy one they haven't been able to explain? Like, what's the struggle for most brewers?
Yeah, I think what it comes down to is haze control. Okay, so, you know, as craft brewers, we brew lots of different styles of beer, and they all have different requirements regarding the level of haze that's required, right? You can't make every beer hazy. If someone put in front of me a nice a Munich Helles that was hazy, I would go, that looks like shit, you know? Yeah. And alternatively, as with this brewery that I highlighted before, if you put in front of me a beer that you say is going to be hazy and it's not, you as the brewer have not delivered on what you said you were going to do, and that consumer is automatically going to be disappointed as a result of that. And I think a lot of that comes from, you know, having unexpected beer haze outcomes, right? That can be a real problem. Delivering on what you say you're going to deliver on as the brewer is super, super important. And it can become very frustrating, because for a lot of brewers out there, they've actually, you know, you've actually experienced that problem of making a hazy beer that's dropped bright, or trying to make a bright beer that's turned out hazy, where the haze doesn't go away, and it makes the beer not what you intended it to be, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So what causes beer haze? Because, like, I remember back in the day when Petit Topper had just come out and everyone was trying to brew it and everyone was adding flour to their brew, or apple sauce or apple. There were all sorts of things being added to beers to add haze because no one knew what to do. But even before then, when you wanted to have a crystal clear beer and you got hazy beers, why? Like, what's causing that there?
Yeah, so basically there's lots of different things that can make haze in beer, okay? So basically beer haze can be caused by or created through a number of different things. Like, so first up, and the most common one is microorganisms, okay? Yeast and bacteria, when they're in suspension in the beer, if there's enough yeast cells or bacteria cells, if you're making a kettle sour or something like that, they make haze, okay? The proteins and polyphenols can make haze. So there is an interaction between proteins and polyphenols. So in malt, there are there are proteins and polyphenols, and when they interact with each other under certain conditions, they will make haze in beer. If you're using fruit in beer, you mentioned apple before, yep. People putting apple in their beer. Okay, yep. So for many fruits, I'm not particularly sure about apples in particular, but pectins are a really interesting one because pectins are a compound that's in fruit that when exposed to alcohol, ethanol, will cause haze, right? Basically, the pectins will, they coagulate in the beer, and the pectins can create haze in beer, right?
Yeah.
Carbohydrates, they can make haze in beer, in particular glucan, so alpha, beta glucan, for instance, right? So if you're mashing, you get that the stodgy, porridgey thing that's in malt that makes it go all sticky and gluey, or if you're having a bowl of oatmeal or something like that, that's like beta glucan, right, which is a carbohydrate, and they can cause haze in beer. And then probably the last one that's the most common is hop compounds, in particular dry hop compounds. And again, this comes down to polyphenols. So the hop vegetal material, any vegetal material for that matter, that's why it's in malt as well as hops. Polyphenols can leach into the beer, react with the proteins that are already in the beer, and then create that haze issue. It's really interesting though, because haze is something that can be measured with an instrument, okay? And you can create a number as to the amount of haze, right? Yep. So a lot of brewers, what they do when they talk about haze, they talk about haze in very broad general terms. Oh, that's bright. That's a little bit hazy. It's a lot hazy, but it's actually a number that can be measured with a turbidity meter or a haze meter. And so the unit of measure is EBC for haze. And it's important that when you're setting quality targets around your beer, that you actually do specify a haze target, because, you know, there are breweries out there, classic case in point, Range Brewing here in Brisbane, really well known for their hazy beers, and they're very, very good at it. I'm a fanboy of Range. They centrifuge their hazy beers, right? No. Because they you might go, why are they putting their beer through a centrifuge? And the reason is that they have a target number about the level of haze that they want. Yeah. They don't want it to be, muddy and just look so hazy. It's just looks thick and terrible, but then they don't want it to be bright either. And so the centrifuge is basically a tool that polishes the haze in the beer to get it to a consistent level, right? And so, when you think about haze like that, then all of a sudden it becomes a quality parameter that you can control, just like every other part of the brewing process.
So we've talked about like that sort of those style of beers, neepers and that sort of stuff, but then you've got your like temporary sort of haze as well, like chill haze and things like that. So that you don't always know you've got chill haze. Where do you get like these different permanents and temporaries, and then how do you keep some of your haze permanent? Because you don't want that yeast dropping out in a can and someone gets that stodgy bit at the bottom.
Yes. Okay. Do you know the difference between permanent and temporary haze?
I'm going to let you explain it to me. I'm going to say no. I can answer and then you would go.
Okay.
You would do your famous.
Well, I'll be like, nah.
And I'll tell you what the reason is.
Okay. Really quick summary of, okay, so there's two types of haze in beer. You've got permanent haze and you've got temporary haze, okay? Right. Now, it sounds counterintuitive, right? So you've heard of the phenomenon of chill haze before. So maybe you're making a nice crispy boy, or, let's just use pale lager as an example, right? You're making this nice crispy boy, you pull it out of the tap or out of the bright tank or something like that into a glass, and you sit on there and it's hazy. Right when it's cold,
right.
And as the beer warms up, the haze disappears. Okay, now that's chill. That's a phenomenon called chill haze, and that is caused as a result of the interaction between proteins and polyphenols. Some people say tannins. Okay, tannins are a polyphenol. Right, chill haze is a temporary haze. Whereas on the flip side, permanent haze is always in the beer. So yeast and bacteria and pectins, right, for example, they are a form of permanent haze. I can run my beer through a filter or a centrifuge or crash chill it and have the yeast drop out of suspension, you know, to the bottom of the tank, and it's gone. Okay.
Can I jump in and ask? Yeah. When you're using things like, you know, clarifiers like Biofine and whatever you're using to clean your beer, if you're using a fuge, how far does the fuge go to strip flavor out of the beer if you're trying to really push it to get a crystal clear beer and you can't? And you've got Biofine, which does its job. Do you Biofine first and then use your fuge? And then where does that flavor balance come? Like, where do you?
Yeah. Okay. There's a lot of misconceptions about Biofine. And let's swing back around to that because there's some really interesting stuff. And I think a lot of brewers misuse Biofine by not understanding actually what it does. All right.
Yeah.
So hold that thought. We'll come back to that. Right. Yep. Let's talk about the centrifuge, right? The really cool thing about having a centrifuge in a brewery and dealing with permanent haze, right? So getting yeast out of a beer, is that it doesn't affect the flavor. Okay. And that's why they're so popular. Back when I first became a brewer 15 years ago, filtration was very popular, right? To make beers, to get rid of that haze, right? To get the beers bright. That might have taken a lot of different forms. Back when I used to work at Prickly Moses, we used to use a plate and frame filter with the cellulose sheets.
Yep.
A lot of breweries were using diatomaceous earth filtration.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Diatomaceous earth. I wouldn't use it because these days we don't use it these days because it's carcinogenic.
I stayed well away. Risk.
Oh yeah, it's bad. Keys were probably a bit better, perlite, all that sort of stuff's a little bit safer, but the premise is the same. Yeah, that right. Shit's a sponge for dry hop compounds, right? So whilst it does a great job in removing the yeast from the beer, it also removes the hop aroma and flavor. And so that is why you see these days that breweries have switched from diatomaceous earth filtration. Incidentally, if you use a plate and frame filter, in addition to the cellulose, they also have DE in them, impregnated in it.
Yeah, right? Okay.
And so it does; it'll do the same thing, okay, because it's an adsorption type of filtration, okay? That's why a lot of breweries have switched to centrifugation or using a centrifuge, which is basically where you spin the beer to get the solids out. It's centrifuge is, you know, without going into the details of how a centrifuge works, if you have a Billy can of tea, I'm Australian, by the way, so all of our American friends and our foreign friends are Europeans, all that sort of stuff. Billy can, you put it over the fire, you bring the water to the boil, you throw tea leaves in, and then to get the tea leaves out, you would swing the hot can of tea around and around over your head and all that sort of stuff, and then stop, and the tea would drop to the bottom. Okay, that's centrifugal force acting on the solids. That's pretty much how a centrifuge works, is that it spins the beer around really fast so that the heavy things, and in this case, the yeasts, go to the outside. Probably a topic for another episode. The good thing is that why centrifuges are so good and so popular is that they don't strip flavor out because they're not actually a filtration. They're a separator.
Yeah.
And they're a really good tool to have. Expensive, but good. You know, they'll make you money, but you know that's why they're a thing. Now in craft breweries.
And your chill haze, is that a fault of the brewer? Is that a fault of the process? Is it a fault of the beer ingredients? Is it all of the above?
Yes. In part, okay. So it depends upon your objectives with your beer that you're brewing, okay? If you're trying to brew a hazy beer, you do whatever you want. If you want to make chill haze, great. It's going to add to the beer and that's all good, all right?
Because there is where it's accepted.
100%. Yeah, for sure. If your objective is to make a hazy beer, you do whatever you want to make that level of haze that you want, whether it's permanent or temporary. Horses for courses, right? Every brewer is different, that sort of thing, right? But let's assume for a second that you're trying to brew a nice bright beer. Might be a nice bright American pale ale or an IPA, or it might be a nice Munich Helles or some other, you know, pale lager style, American lager or something like that, right? chill haze and permanent haze, right, is something that you don't want in those styles of beer. And so what chill haze is it's an interaction between proteins and polyphenols. And at cold temperatures, they will bind to each other and form a solid that is visible to the naked eye, because you can't see proteins
yep.
in the naked eye. You can't, I mean, unless there's a shitload of polyphenols in a beer, you're not going to see those. But when they get together, when it's cold, you're definitely going to see them, all right? And they bind together, and that's a, you know, that's a chemical, you know, reaction that's happening there. So that's what causes chill haze, right? Now, how does chill haze get into a beer? Well, from my experience and a lot of the brewers that I've worked with and that sort of thing, the number one cause of chill haze getting into a beer is oversparging. It's just such a, you know, I would say to you as the brewer listening to this, right, if you are getting chill haze in your beer, start with the brew house, right? Start with your lautering technique. We've got a really cool tool in the Rockstar Brewer Academy. It's called the Lauter Cheat Sheet. And so basically, it allows you to monitor your lauter and your sparge such that you don't cause chill haze to wind up in your wort and therefore your beer. So you're not extracting those tannins and polyphenols out of your grain bed into the wort. There's a really common rule.
You say oversparge, is that you running your sparge too fast, or you are trying to go for more of a target volume in your kettle and you're just pulling more out than you're eating?
That's you've hit the nail on the head there, Adzi. That is the most common mistake, is that when brewers are sparging, they go, I need to sparge until my kettle gets to a certain volume. Volume in the context of beer quality is not a target number.
Yep.
End of story.
Yeah. Okay. That's where we want it, but it's not.
Yes, if you get it, great. But if you go and make, you know, if you're aiming to make 1,000 liters of beer and you only make not and you make 1,000 liters of shit beer, well, there's no point. You've wasted your time, right? But if I can make 950 liters of really good beer, right, and just drop my yield up by 5%. Then I'm ahead. I'm already ahead, right? Sparging to a volume is not how I or the members of the Rockstar Brewer Academy brew, right? We lauter and sparge to a target kettle gravity. But most importantly is we monitor the lauter, okay? And what we look at is we look at a number of different things. We monitor the kettle gravity during the lauter, okay, as the kettle is filling up. But we monitor the runnings as well, okay? So if you can find a way to take a sample of your runnings as you're lautering, great, okay? And what you want to monitor is you want to monitor your runnings gravity and your runnings pH. These are the two really important numbers, okay? Brewers operate on a rule called, it's called the 6-3 rule. Now, if you're using freedom units, this is going to make sense to you. 6-3, pH of 6. Gravity of 3 Plato. Okay. So that's 10-12 if you're using metrics. Okay. So if the running's gravity goes below 3 Plato, 10-12, or the pH of the runnings goes above a pH of 6, that is when you start to extract tannins and polyphenols. Right. That's the point when that starts to happen. Now, I'm very cautious. I actually operate a little bit more cautious, particularly with the pH. So I'm usually a 5.7 or 5.8-ish, right? If my running's pH goes above 5.7, 5.8, then I'm probably going to cut off my lauter, right? And you have to monitor both. And so the really cool thing is that the lauter cheat sheet, the tool that we use in the Rockstar Brewer Academy, it's a way in which every 15 minutes you can monitor your running's gravity, your running's pH, and your kettle gravity and your kettle volume, and you can actually stop your lauter before you start to extract tannins and polyphenols.
Yep.
And so before you even go and reach for the biofine, you've nipped that problem in the bud.
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool.
Right there is an ad to join Rockstar Brewing Academy.
Hey, thanks, Adzi. If you're a professional brewer, that means that you're either planning, building, or running a brewery. And there's a lot of problems that you're going to encounter on that journey, no matter where you're at. Mainly around getting the right brewing technical knowledge that you need to make amazing beer and save money and save time. You're probably getting your brewing technical knowledge at the moment from endless online internet research. You might be reading countless books, which don't give you actionable things that you can go and implement in your brewery. You might be picking the brain of a local professional brewer or lowest common denominator. You might be going to homebrew forums to get brewing technical knowledge and advice. At the Rockstar Brewer Academy, we operate on three pillars: coursework, coaching, and community. We've got a massive library of content to implement. Lots of things around quality, consistency, passion, and efficiency in your brewery. Coaching, we run a live coaching call once a week. And community, we've got an amazing, supportive online Facebook community of professional brewers who are doing the same thing that you're doing. It's a lot of fun. It's a very supportive community. Oh, and we've got a standard operating procedure library as well. So if you want to save some time writing SOPs in your brewery, we've got a whole bunch. You can just swipe them and contextualize them to your brewery. If you want to know more about that, how about you and I have a chat to see if we're a good fit for each other? Head to rockstarbrewer.com/calibration and book yourself in a free 15-minute calibration call. We'll just get together, meet each other, have a bit of a chat. I'll ask you a few questions and work out if we're a good fit for each other. So head to rockstarbrewer.com/calibration and book yourself in a calibration call. And I look forward to meeting you. Now let's get back to the show. So before you reach for the Biofine, take a look at your lautering practice, because that's more than likely going to nip 80% of your chill haze problems in the bud.
Yeah. Excellent. Quicken recipes to adjust your haze, like adding wheat or all of these things that people will try and do to add haze or remove haze. Are you running around a wheel? Are you chasing things that you don't need?
What do you mean running around a wheel?
Are you chasing things that aren't there? Like, do you need to be doing that?
I mean, if you're trying to make a hazy beer or be in control of your haze, let's assume we're trying to make a hazy beer, okay? Knowing what the haze is made from is key to actually getting control of that haze, okay? So proteins, like proteins make up, 30-ish% of the haze that's in good hazy beer. And, you know, with a lesser extent, you know, it's not so hazy beers aren't necessarily about the yeast. Yes, yeast is a part of it. Before you start railing on at me and in the comments, we're going, oh, you know, the haze is yeast. It's not all in a hazy IPA. Not all of the haze is yeast. Okay, a lot of it is based on proteins, and that is why brewers choose to use things like wheat and oats and chit malt and triticale and all of these adjuncts that are not barley that have a higher quantity of these proteins, right? And so, yes, your recipe is important in terms of targeting a certain hazy style of beer, right? But your process, I mean, that's just, you know, me. It's all about the process and that sort of thing. And that's what you need to be sort of looking into, right, is, you know, your process, your lautering process, choosing the right raw materials to go into your recipe. All of these things can make some dramatic differences to make sure that you've got control over the haze in your beer.
Yep. Biofine. I'm sure as what Biofine is. You know,
do you know what Biofine is?
I'm pretty confident it's a compound from seaweed, isn't it?
No, that is carrageenan.
Okay. Well, then no, I don't know what Biofine is.
Yeah. Okay. So
Biofine, there's Brutan B, there is, some people use gelatin.
Yes. Yes. There's lots of things that you can use to reduce haze in beer. Okay. Biofine is the one that everybody thinks about straight up, because that's the one these days that is most commonly used, right? There are lots, right? So carrageenan, which, you know, sometimes it's called a well flock G that you put in the kettle. Okay. That's a fining agent. Fining means to drop haze out of something. There is, back when I first became a brewer, you know, back in the late 2000s, right, that long ago, we used to use PVPP. Yeah, exactly. Or isinglass is a
fine. Yeah, I was going to say isinglass.
Isinglass, which comes from the swim bladder of, I can't remember what fish it is, but it's a swim bladder from a certain type of fish. Gelatin, which comes from bones of animals in the abattoir, is a fining agent. Brutan B is an interesting one. That's actually a concentrated form of tannic acid, okay,
yeah,
which has a fining effect and that sort of thing. But biofine is the one that people, you know, brewers are using now, because it's the most accessible and it's reasonably priced. PVPP, when I used to use it back in the day, was extremely expensive but very effective, right? We would use it in the whirlpool and it would do the job very well.
Yeah. Right?
Well, let's talk about biofine, because here's the thing, is that most brewers use biofine incorrectly and don't understand exactly what it does, right? So what biofine is it is salicylic acid. Okay, it's an acid that from silicon, basically. Yep. And its job, right, is to create an electrical charge to attract the tannins and polyphenols and the proteins,
right?
To attract them, bind, and then they become a solid which will drop out in the tank.
Yep.
Right. That's what its job is, right? The misconception is that a lot of brewers use it to deal with yeast tatties, okay? And yes, it does the same thing. It does the electric charge and it binds and it will drop yeast out and that sort of thing, but that's not its primary purpose, okay? Its primary purpose back in the day was to be used in big breweries, you know, post-primary filtration, once the yeast had been removed and sort of pre-polishing, you know, almost going into the bright tank, to remove the to drop the protein polyphenol, the chill haze compounds out, right?
Yeah.
It's best used in beer where there's no yeast.
Yeah.
The other thing is that there's a really good Master Brewers, MBAA, Master Brewers Association of the Americas podcast episode about biofine. And basically in that episode, they said most brewers use it wrong because what they do is they put it into cold beer at 0 degrees or 32 Fahrenheit, okay? And what happens is that that's approaching the freezing point of biofine and it crystallizes and drops to the bottom of the tank without doing its job.
Yep. Right. That makes sense.
Most brewers use biofine too cold. So if you're using biofine, the best temperature to use it, according to this episode, is at 4 degrees Celsius, which is 39 Fahrenheit.
Yeah, right.
Okay. So how I use biofine, what works for me, right, and may not work for you if you're a different brewer. Again, hold the hate, people. I'm just a person.
Keyboard warriors attacking
me. Everybody's got their own way of doing things. You do you, I'll do me, and we're okay. We're still friends, all right? Is that I will crash chill the beer to 4 degrees Celsius, 39F, drop the yeast out, right, as best as I possibly can, and then get the biofine into the tank to deal with the colloidal stability, so the chill haze compounds in the beer. And you know the really good thing about when you do that at 4 degrees Celsius, 39 Fahrenheit, it takes about 8 hours.
Yeah.
Right. Chuck it in at the end of the day, come back in the morning, and it's done. You don't need to wait, okay? Yeah. If you don't have filtration in your, and so that's a common misuse of biofine, is to use it at the right temperature. So 8 hours at 4 degrees, 39F, then drop it to zero, right?
Yeah.
Then carbonate it or whatever you're going to do and get, and you're done from there and that sort of thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It does to me.
Yeah. And I learned that from that MBAA podcast.
Yeah. Okay.
You know?
Yep.
And I tried it. And I was like, "Holy shit, this is amazing! It works." So if you're popping biofine into your beer at 0 degrees Celsius, you're essentially wasting your money on the biofine because it's too cold for it to do its job.
100% makes sense too that it's going to crystallize and sink. I mean, that's what we're wanting it to do to the compounds.
We want the protein and polyphenols to
That's right.
To drop, if it's just become bind and drop
sink on its own.
But if the biathlon itself is going to drop out, then you're wasting your time. Exactly. Yeah. So it's a really interesting one, right? And the thing is that a lot of those other, you know, fining agents like Isinglass, for instance, they pretty much operate on the same principle.
Yeah.
Right. He's creating an electrical charge to bind and drop and that sort of thing. Right. Mm. There you go. The more you know.
Yeah, 100%. Reducing haze in the brood house. What do you got for me?
So I would say good lautering technique, right? In the brew house, hot side. Okay. Here's another really good tip as well. Is get the cold break out of the tank as well. So when you knock out, you got hot break, you got cold break. Cold break happens on the way to the fermenter. So 24 hours after you put the wort in the tank, is go and drop a tiny, tiny little amount out of the bottom of the cone. A tiny, tiny amount. You'll see it. And get that break material out of the tank. All right. And then let the fermentation roll. You're all good.
I've heard that
too. I like to use, a good one. It'll make your yeast healthy. Your yeast will be healthier and happier, and you'll have less haze and all that sort of stuff, chill haze in particular. Water chemistry, right, is a big part of making your beer clear, right? Matty Cuthbert said in the last episode, right, he doesn't have a filter or a centrifuge or anything like that in his brewery, but he makes a lot of lager unfiltered. And how he does it is he adjusts his water chemistry. And so one of the members of the Rockstar Brewer Academy, Brenton from Kickback Brewing down in Aldinga in South Australia, he opened his brewery, and his Munich Helles was his biggest selling beer. And he rang me up a few weeks after his brewery opened. He said, "I've run out of beer." And I said, "Oh, what's going on, mate?" He goes, "Oh, well, the residence time's way too long for this lager, and it's my biggest selling beer." And I'm like, "Oh, well, let's fix that. What's going on?" And we had a bit of a chat about it, and the beer wasn't dropping bright quick enough. And we had a look at his water chemistry, and we made one little change. All we did is we just put more calcium in the water. More calcium.
Yep.
Next batch, problem solved. We changed one little thing. Didn't have to reach for the biofine, didn't have to put any fining agents in, didn't have to implement any filtration or centrifugation. It was just a little bit more calcium.
Yeah.
So if you find yourself in the situation where you find that yeast isn't dropping out, and you can very easily monitor this because, we've done this in my garage. Grab the beer, grab your microscope, plate it up, and if you can see yeast cells, it's yeast.
Yeah. Right?
And if you just add 5 to 10 ppm of calcium to your water chemistry and do it in such a way so that you maintain the other two flavor numbers, so beer pH and the sulfate to chloride ratio, then that will have more of an effect on dropping yeast out than biofine ever will.
Yeah.
And it's cheaper, right? That's what Matty Cuthbert does, and he does it with great success.
Yeah. They're
probably the things that I would look at.
Oh, save residence time too, which is also money in the bank.
Yeah, well, that's what makes money. Yeah. Exactly, yep.
Yeah. Post-fermentation.
Yeah. So post-fermentation, I would say, okay, one of the other things you could probably do as well to deal with chill haze is Clarix.
Yep.
Okay. Clarix is really interesting. It's a protease. It's an enzyme. It's a protease enzyme. So it basically snaps proteins, right? So if the proteins aren't able to bond with the polyphenols, well, then no chill haze. Job done. Right. Yep. A lot of people think of Clarix as Brewer's Clarix as the gluten-reduced or gluten-free enzyme, because guess what? Gluten is a protein. And so, see someone, don't give your celiac friends who actually have health issues shit about this, but next time you meet someone who's a little bit flaky, goes, "Oh, I don't eat gluten," and ask them what gluten is, and they won't be able to tell you. Gluten is a protein, people. Okay, so and Clarix is an enzyme that breaks down, is a protease enzyme that breaks down gluten. Gluten is one of the many proteins in wort and beer, and it breaks that down, right? So get rid of the protein, no binding, no chill haze, right? That's another way to do it. Biofine, for sure. they're probably the modern ways I'll do it. Yes, there are others, but that they're usually the ones that are pretty accessible and that sort of thing. Yeah.
All well and good getting rid of haze. What if we want it in there? How are we creating stable haze? Like, what have you got?
Get the protein in there. That's going to be oats, wheat, flaked wheat, chit malt, you know, something like that is.
Oh, things like spring blanch.
Yeah. Look, okay, so you can get things like spring blanch. Is that a Lalaman product? It's a Lalaman product, isn't it?
Oh, I think it is.
Or it's a fermentus product. I can't remember. I think it's fermentus. And so spring blanch is a thing that you can go and add, create haze, and it's basically creating colloidal haze, okay, to an extreme. Look, there's nothing wrong with it, but I think it should, as far as the I've tried this, it didn't work, I've tried this, it didn't work, I've tried this, it didn't work. You're going to get to the point where, okay, now we need to have a think about adding specifically some sort of haze product into the beer somehow, and that's where spring blanch would come into play.
Yeah, hop haze liquid as well.
That is correct. Yes. So that's basically polyphenols from hop products, which you're going to get from dry hopping a beer anyways.
Yeah.
Scott Janisch I had a really good chat with him in Vietnam last year, and he had a really good talk, and he basically says for his hazy IPAs, he dry hops on a certain day of fermentation. I think it was day 6 or day 7. Now that's going to, I took that on board and I went, well, that's going to vary from beer to beer depending upon the starting gravity and the yeast strain and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. But there's going to be a particular point for your particular beer where the timing of the dry hop will have a positive effect on haze.
Yep.
Again, different horses for courses, guys. Yep. There's many different beers and styles and processes out there. You do you, right? And probably, and the other one as well as far as haze goes is yeast strain selection. So you want to select a yeast strain which is not flocculent, right? Which doesn't drop to the bottom of the tank. So even though, you know, London Ale 3 is a strain that's very commonly used in hazy IPA, a lot of other English strains are highly flocculent. They will drop to the bottom of the tank very easily as soon as they get they're lazy, right? Not that they're lazy, that's just how they behave.
Yeah.
So yeast strain selection. Now it's very interesting, right? And this is the thing that a brewer needs to balance, right? Because the water chemistry of hazy IPA warrants very elevated levels of chloride. And the way that you're mostly going to get that is from calcium chloride. So you add in calcium. Calcium causes yeast flocculation, okay? So your water chemistry is going to be in that mix as far as, and your water chemistry in conjunction with your yeast strain need to be taken into consideration in your recipe so that you achieve the haze outcome that you want and also the water chemistry outcome that you want with that elevated chloride that's in it.
How do we troubleshoot all of this stuff?
Okay. Number one, if you're thinking about haze, before you get to the point where you're troubleshooting haze, set haze targets in your recipe, okay? At the Rockstar Brewer Academy, we use a tool called the product specification. And as we've talked about in a previous episode, we define beer quality through two lenses, fit for use and true to brand. Fit for use is anything you can measure with an instrument that has a number. Hey, there's a turbidity meter. It makes a EBC number. You can measure haze, okay, and give it a number. Yeah. Turbidity meters aren't that expensive, by the way, probably a couple of grand, okay? I know that might be inaccessible for a smaller brewery, but for, you know, medium to large breweries, you should have a haze meter, okay? The second thing so you need a fit for use quality target for haze, and you need a true to brand target for haze, right? You need to actually have a worded description of what the haze should look like, okay? Another fit for use metric that you could use as well, if yeast is your form of haze, and we did this back in the day when I was brewing Pacific Ale, is we had a certain cell count that was supposed to be in the finished beer. Okay. And so grab your beer, chuck it under the microscope with a hemocytometer and you count the yeast cells in the beer and you'll be able to specifically measure if you've hit that certain haze target, right? So before you get to troubleshooting, set the lane markings on your freeway to say this is where the beer should be. And if it steps outside of that, then troubleshoot it. But don't just go, oh, that beer looks too hazy. What have I done?
Yeah.
Because you're wasting your time, right? And then once you've, if something is not on spec for whatever reason, whether it's not fit for use or not true to brand, well, then you can start to drill down and look into the things that might be going right or going wrong, you know? And, you know, if you're going to start troubleshooting, start with the stuff that's easy to measure, right? Go find a local friendly brewer who's got a turbidity meter. Go determine whether the issue is permanent haze or temporary haze, right, that you're trying to deal with. And just go through a process of deduction, you know, and working out where your haze issue is. But it all starts with creating targets around your beer. You should have targets for all of your quality metrics. You can't make good beer if good is, what did you say in that other episode? Like, oh, I'll just know if the beer is right, or what did you say? It's like, you know, when I say to people, how do you know your beer is good? And they go, oh, I'll just know.
Yeah. I can't remember.
Yeah. But it's like, you know, if you just know what the haze is, quantify it in some way, either through a number or a worded description. If you can't quantify what good is, then you don't know what bad is.
Yeah. Right?
And you're not going along that path of quality and that sort of thing. And if you need some help with that, come and have a chat to me. I'd love to talk to you about it. So cool.
I don't know whether it's made more hazy or more clean. So
I was going to say, do you have some more clarity? Do you have some more clarity around this? I love the intended puns. It's so good. Mate, thank you so much for the chat today. I really enjoyed it. And if you want to have a chat to me, come and have a chat to me. Love to meet you.
Yep. Can't confirm. Adzie, you're a good chatter.
That's my job.
Great.
Adzie, thanks, mate.
Thank you.
Catch you in the next episode.
Cheers, mate.